We're going to start again with all the introductions we did last time. Hopefully this time we'll get through everything. There's a joke about a chassid who wanted his son to grow up as pure as possible. So he took his son out to an island and he brought him up where there were no women, and he brought him up teaching him Torah day and night and growing up with sheep and with animals and on the highest level of purity. And then when the kid was 17, so he took him to the mainland, and they just get off the boat and they see a woman walking down the street. And he turns to his father and he says, "Tati, what's this? What's that?" So his father says, "That's a special type of goat." So he turns to his father and he says, "Tati, get me a goat like that." What's the idea behind this joke? That whatever you're going to do, we have a natural inclination to be attracted to women. It's a healthy inclination. But we have to be aware that it exists. And the Torah expected us to live our lives on a holy level and to enjoy life and do things properly and to live a moral life where one is faithful to his wife and a wife is faithful to her husband. At the same time, the Torah recognized that we're men and God built us with certain inclinations. And the Torah commanded us, "Lo tachmod eshet recha." You're not allowed to even want your friend's wife. The Torah doesn't say anything about what you're going to do with her. That's also forbidden. But the Torah says if a person goes with his friend's wife, he gets killed. If a person is being told, "Go with your friend's wife or we'll kill you," that's one of the things that a person should rather kill himself than do. And yet at the same time, we know that all over the world, people do it. People have a natural inclination to do it. Everyone wants to do it. So the Torah forbade not only going with a woman who is forbidden to go with, but also to think about such a thing. The Torah says that a person is not allowed to cause himself to become hard. A person is not allowed to have any thoughts during the day that would make him hard. That's forbidden biblically. It's an Isur D'Oraisa. And we know that if he does, then there's a good chance that at night he's going to have what's called a wet dream. Now, we've mentioned in the past that such things happen to every person. And Yaakov was an exceptional person who said he never emitted any sperm except for when he first got married. It's a very rare thing, even among pious people, to find such thing. But a person can control his thoughts, and a person is supposed to control his thoughts and his actions. The Torah expected us to honor women. We're going to have in our class about the home certain obligations that a husband has with regard to his wife. Our sages taught us, "Mechavdo yoser migufo." A person has to honor his wife more than himself. If he has a limited amount of money, he has to remember that her honor comes first. And we're going to discuss that in the class about marriage. But we have to understand that the Torah was very realistic, and the Torah knew what mud men are made out of. It's true we have a neshama that's supposed to elevate us, but we're still made of the physical, and we're attracted to the physical. And in our aspirations to build the Jewish people in the holy fashion that we're supposed to be built, we have guidelines that help us. The nations have always envied the Jewish home. Even Bilam, when he came to curse the Jewish people, he couldn't help but say, "Matovu alecha Yaakov, how great are your tents, O Yaakov." When a couple get married, so they make a blessing under the chuppah, the blessing of kiddushin. And what do we say in that blessing? Asher kiddushanu b'mitzvotav. God made us holy with His mitzvot. V'tzivanu ala arayot. And He commanded us about the women that we're forbidden to go with. V'asa lanu et arusot. And He forbade us with women who are engaged to someone else. V'hitir lanu. And at the same time, God permitted us et hanesuot lanu, those that are married to us, al yedei chuppah v'kiddushin, through a chuppah and kiddushin. Now this blessing is not a blessing on a mitzvah. Before you perform mitzvah, so you make a blessing. This blessing that we make when we get engaged to a woman is a blessing of praise, in which we thank God for giving us such a holy institution of marriage, such a holy cell that the home represents because of the way that we behave, the way we maintain ourselves. In all other halachos, I try to find every leniency I can. You know that. So much so that there are things that I say in this class I don't even want to publish on the web. But I do, because there are other people from the Machon who can't make it to every class or who aren't here anymore. In the laws of the laws that pertain to a man and a woman, we have to know that because we have a very, very strong tendency to do what's wrong, a person should try to be more stringent with himself. Now, I'm not talking about a person walking with blindfolds in the street, but I am talking about when we represent that there's more than one opinion on certain halachos, a person should try to maintain the more stringent opinion. In these halachos also, I'm going to try to give you as much kulas as I could, but you should know that this is one area where even a person who's starting out should try to maintain the higher level and not the lower level. This isn't the chumrah that I'm concerned is going to cause a person to say, I can't handle this. The Gemara records many stories about many of the Tanoim, and we mentioned some last night. And the Gemara records that certain Tanoim told their family members, don't leave me alone with my daughter-in-law. Watch me with my daughter-in-law. What did they say, watch me with my daughter-in-law for? So they weren't embarrassed. They said, you know, I'm human, and I know I'm attracted to her. I want you to watch me. So people said, aren't you embarrassed? So I'm sure they answered, yeah, I'm embarrassed. Of course I'm embarrassed to say such a thing. But the truth is that if I don't tell you, watch me, don't leave me alone with my daughter-in-law, then improper things are going to happen. I know I can't trust myself. And a person is supposed to learn from that, that a person shouldn't be embarrassed by the fact that he has natural inclinations. It's normal. And a person should be more concerned not to be embarrassed from the outcome. We know that all over the world, people fail in this. The Gemara records two stories. It says there was one Tano who was old, and every time after Shmon Esrei, when he put his head down, he'd say, God, save me from the Yetzer Hara. And his wife said, you're an old man. What are you so worried about the Yetzer Hara at your age? So one day she got all dressed up, and she was walking out of the house, and he saw her. And he didn't recognize her. He said, who are you? So she said, I'm the Zona, the famous, how do you say Zona in English? What's a nice word for it?
Prostitute.
That's not a nice word for it. Okay, we'll say woman for sale. I'm the famous woman for sale who has been out of town for such and such amount of time. I just got back today. He said, really? How much is it? So she said, I'm not coming with you till you go to the top of that date tree and get me the branch that's on top. So this old man, within a second, was up on top of the tree, grabbed the branch, brought it down there. He came home later that day, and his wife was preparing to make supper or lunch. She was preparing the oven. So he went and climbed into the oven. So she said, what you doing? So he said, this is what I deserve. This is what's going to be with me. So she said, are you nuts? It was me. So he said, no, it wasn't. So she said, of course it was me. And he said, no, it wasn't you. He started telling her the whole story. She said, I know the whole story. It was me. And he didn't believe her until she gave him certain signs about what went on there. And then he believed her, and he spent the rest of his life mourning, because he said, I didn't know it was you. I thought I was going with such and such a person. And he spent the rest of his life mourning for what he did. What do we see? We see that great, great, great people also have a problem with this. That's why I always tell girls, I don't care if a person's a rabbi. That doesn't mean you could be more lenient with these laws. I won't talk to a girl in my home if my wife isn't home. I try to do it only by phone. I, to begin with, don't do it unless I must. And if I have to, it's only if my wife is home and the door isn't fully closed to the room. Even though you'll say my wife could always come in, so we'll discuss the halachos. But a person has to try and go beyond the halachos. These are areas where no one can be trusted. Doesn't matter how long his beard is, doesn't matter how long he's been learning, or how great he is. No one is to be trusted on these matters, and certainly no person should trust himself. People sometimes say, it doesn't affect me. Okay, so the Gemara records that one of the Tanaim said, don't leave me alone with my daughter. It's my daughter. And he had a student that laughed at him. He said, oh, you, what are you so worried about? The Gemara records that that student messed up in then. And we had here in Israel. I don't know. I don't read the paper. But when my chavrusa saw I was working on the laws of Yichud, so he told me that there's a famous actor here in Israel, I don't know his name, who was Chozer B'tshuva. And a friend of his, who's also an actor, wrote a whole play making fun of his friend who was Chozer B'tshuva and the laws of Yichud. And in an interview he said, I don't get this guy. Suddenly he's Chozer B'tshuva and he can't shake my wife's hand. Suddenly he has such a big Yetzer Hara, he doesn't shake my wife's hand, his wife's hand. He's not willing to do anything. That's what happens when you become from. You have such a big Yetzer Hara. And a short while later, just became public. This man was caught with harassing and doing improper things with female students that he had. The court won't even let him come close. He has to get a court order before he can come to a classroom where girls are there. He was so bad with what he did. So this is the same guy who looked at him and said, oh, what are you doing? You're worried about shaking my wife's hand. Chazal knew exactly what they were talking about. We all know what it means to be a man, and we all know what our natural inclinations are. And Chazal said no person could or should trust himself. And we should know that our inclinations are good things when they're used correctly. The Ramban records a prayer that he used to pray before he went with his wife at night. And part of the prayer he used to say was, God, may my ta'ava, may my inclination, my desire, be ready for me when I need it. So if the ta'ava, if our desire is such a negative thing, why did he include as part of his prayer, may I always be able to arouse myself and have the proper desire? Because it's not a negative thing. It's a thing that has to be contained and used properly. But we also have to be aware of our inclinations and the fact that we cannot be trusted. The Gemara records stories about special chassidim who were placed in difficult circumstances and they were saved and they didn't sin. But they're special stories. We had not a long time ago, a few hundred years ago, Rav Mordechai Yaffe, who compiled, he was a disciple of the Rama, and he compiled the book Levush. And what happened was he was invited by a very important woman of the government to her house, and he couldn't refuse. And he thought it was a political meeting. She had questions. Before he knew it, he found himself in a room alone with her. And she locked the door. And he had no way out. And he looked at the window, and he looked at her, and he sees this good-looking woman, and he knows that he's in danger. Now, he was called Rav Mordechai Yaffe because their family were very, very good-looking people, Yaffe. And he looked out the window, and at the bottom they had the place where all the feces were placed. This huge bin with dung and human feces. And here's this woman. And he says, Ribbono Shel'olam, save me, I don't want to sin. And he jumps out. And he lands straight into the bin filled with feces. And he looks up, and he sees his clothes all dirty, and she didn't want to come near him after that. And he says, Ribbono Shel'olam, these are the clothing of kingdom. Mordechai walked out from before the king, and he wore special clothes of kingdom. I'm wearing clothes of kingdom. These dirty clothes, I was saved today from sin. He knew that he couldn't trust himself if he stays in the room. So he said, I was saved today from sin, and in honor of you, God, I'm going to compile Sfarim. And he compiled on each portion of Shulchan Aruch, and each sefer is called the Levush, the garment of clothing. And he goes according to the order of the pasuk that describes Mordechai, how Mordechai went out, so the pasuk describes each garment he wore. Mordechai etzam l'fnei ha-melech b'levush malchus, so his first volume is called Levush Malchus, a garment of royalty, v'ateres zahav, and a crown of gold. And each description in the pasuk, he compiled another volume, another part of Shulchan Aruch, praising God and thanking God that he was saved from sin. So here we have a disciple of the Rama, and he knew he couldn't trust himself. He jumped out of the window, and he knew he has to thank God for being saved from sin. So I don't think any of us are better than him. And we all have to be aware that the world has a tendency to go down, and most people can't live up to these tests. And we have halachos that tell us what we must do and how we have to caution ourselves. The Torah says that a person is forbidden to even think about a woman. Obviously, we're talking about improper thoughts. You're thinking, should I marry her or shouldn't I marry her? That's a proper thought. A person is not supposed to speak to women just because he enjoys it. it's positive. It's good that a person enjoys talking to women, and that's the way a normal person should be, but a person should know to contain that, and we're not supposed to talk to them for that enjoyment. A person isn't supposed to joke with them or be lightheaded with women. Now, I'm telling you this because you're all going on dates, so it's true. Part of the date is it has to be fun, but there's a fine line between having fun and talking in a sense that stems from desire or being lightheaded. A date has to be fun, but we have to know where the limitations are. It's interesting that the Shulchan Aruch uses the term me'od me'od. Very, very much a person has to distance himself from women, because we know that very, very much a person is inclined to go towards women. A person has to know that we said in the beginning of class that any question that's pertaining to the application of what we're saying, right now we have a paper here, and we'll deal with it either at the end of class if we have time, or at a separate class. Right now we're just running through the halachos. A person isn't allowed to do body language, to throw signals towards women, to wink, to do any other signals with his eyes. A person isn't allowed to look at a woman's beauty. That's forbidden. A person isn't allowed to smell with the intent of enjoying the perfume that a woman wears. A person isn't allowed to look at women when they're standing and doing the laundry. So today, doing the laundry isn't such a thing, but once upon a time, so the way they moved while they were doing the laundry by the river, so certain parts of their body were revealed, and it was immodest. So a person is forbidden to stand and look at that. Obviously, you could draw from that to a woman in a bathing suit. That's far worse. There, everything's already revealed. It's not that her skirt's going to go up, but that there's no skirt there to begin with. If there's a woman that a person knows who she is, a person isn't allowed to look at her clothing, even when they're not on her. So we mentioned last time that if your neighbor's hanging out her clothing to dry, you're not allowed to look at it, because we know if you look at it, then you might come to think certain things. I know that the place where people run into this, into the problem of not looking at a woman, is usually when they're engaged. Being engaged doesn't change any of the status. We're still forbidden to touch a girl, and everything that we're saying now applies to the girl we're engaged to as well. And you want to buy her an engagement ring, and maybe you want to buy her a piece of jewelry for the engagement or the wedding, and she wants to try it on and ask you, how does it look? So then you have a problem. You're not allowed to look at her and tell her how it looks. So I'm telling you in advance. I wasn't aware of this issue till I was sitting with my wife, and we were looking at different things that I wanted to buy her, but she wasn't my wife yet. I was engaged to her. And she says, well, do you like this? And I say, well, I can't look. So, okay, what do you do? So think about it. Figure it out beforehand. Can you analyze it without looking at her, or with looking at the jewelry before she wears it? Or can you look at the jewelry and not look at her? It's not yet her jewelry. You have to figure out how to do it. But you have to be aware that to look at her and tell her she's good looking with this or with that, that's not correct. I was once going with a relative of mine, and we were at a simcha or something, and she said, look at that woman's jewelry. Look at how special that is. I'm not allowed to look at that woman's jewelry. Even if it weren't on her, I wouldn't be allowed to look at it. Certainly when it is on her. We just said that if you know which woman this garment belongs to, you're not allowed to look at it. So I'm certainly not allowed to look at her special earrings or her special necklace. If it's something that you don't understand, tell me. Yeah.
Because when your wife is next to you, then there's no problem, right?
No. It has nothing to do with it. Your wife is next to you is relevant to other halachos. So this, it doesn't help. Your wife could be standing right there. We all know that your wife standing next to you will have no impact on what your thoughts are.
Choose from catalogs.
You don't have to use clothes.
That's a practical application. So write it down. We'll get to that. The halacha says you're not allowed to walk after a woman. So the reason is because the tendency of a man when he's walking behind a woman is to look at her figure. And the halacha says better walk behind the line than walk behind the woman. Now, you walk in Tachna Merkazit, it's practically impossible not to walk behind a woman. So if she's outside your Dalat Amos, she's more than 4 footsteps away, so then there are opinions that say it's okay. And if you're not noticing who you're walking behind, because every second someone else is walking in front of you, so also that makes sense that it should be okay. I didn't see anyone that says that, but I think that makes sense. There's no other way to... How are you going to live life? How are you going to walk in the street? Now, of course, you have to watch what you're looking at, but that's always the case. The halacha says that a person who walks behind a woman when she walks in the river will have no portion in the world to come. Why? Because her skirt will rise when she goes into the water. And or it's going to get wet and cling to her. So what does it say in the Gemara? He will have no portion in the world to come. So just apply that to a woman who's in a bathing suit. I mean, it's far worse than just a woman walking in the river. There's a difference between seeing and looking at. Where everything we describe now, you're not supposed to look at, you're not supposed to see. Looking at a woman, we know that as men, you could look at a girl's pinky and get her out. It's just the way we are. No? I don't think anyone here agrees with you. So give yourself 2 years. The halacha says that a person is forbidden to look with the intent of enjoying a woman's beauty, even at her pinky. And there's no difference between looking at her pinky or any other part of her. A person is not allowed to look at a woman with intent to enjoy her beauty, or listening to her sing, or to see her hair uncovered if she's a married woman.
So hair uncovered with intent to enjoy, or hair uncovered at all?
So hair uncovered we could be a little bit more lenient on, because it's problematic. Women today all walk with their hair uncovered. So there are opinions that say that the hair we could be more lenient, because that women have become accustomed to going uncovered with, and because on hair uncovered we know that a non-married woman is permitted to go with her hair uncovered. So being that you're already used to seeing women's hair, so that isn't a problem unless it affects you. That's why some say you could be more lenient with that. The halacha says you're not allowed to walk near the entrance to the house of a zona. Even if you'll walk 4 amos away, you're not allowed to walk there. Why? Because we don't trust ourselves. Our sages didn't trust themselves. The Gemara records that Rav. Now, who was Rav? Rav was a person who never said a word that was unnecessary. He didn't say one word that wasn't Torah. That was Rav. And we're going to discuss in our class on Binyan HaBayit that a disciple of his was once hiding beneath the bed or outside the window. He wanted to know exactly how Rav is with his wife. And at night when Rav came home and he was with his wife, he behaved like a teenager. He spoke to her and he told her how much he loved her, and he acted like he can't resist being with his wife. And the student asked him, "I don't get it. You're such a pious person outside the house. This is how you behave inside the house?" So he said, "No, this is how I express my love to my wife. You think I'm such a teenager when I come home? I'm not this teenager. I'm not this excited that I speak like this to my wife. No, but this is what she has to hear." So we're going to discuss that in the class of Binyan HaBayit, about what a woman has to hear from her husband. That even our great sages knew that they have to show that they are tremendously in love with their wives when they came to their wives. They couldn't say, "Well, I'm a pious person. I don't say one word for naught." Well, speaking to your wife is not a word for naught. That's one of your obligations. You have to ensure that she feels that she's the most precious person and you can't resist being with her. That's an aspect that we'll leave for the class on building the home. But at the same time, Rav was once walking with his disciple in the street and there was a woman walking before him. So he said, "Lift up your feet from Gehenna and let's get out of here." So he said, "I don't understand. I'm with you and you're with me. What are you worried about?" So he said, yeah. "We're not pious like that person we discussed last night. That the story about the kishuf, he made boils on himself. She took away the boils, and then he ran into a house where he would for sure get in danger rather than be with her." He said, there are special pious people in the world. We're not like that. So Rav said this. This is Rav. You're talking about Rav, who was the only Amora who could argue on Tanoim. Rav is the first generation of Amoraim, a disciple of Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, a disciple of Rabbi, and he said, "I'm not pious enough to trust myself. Let's get out of here." So I think we all have to recognize that we're no better than Rav. A person also has to be careful not to do anything that people will suspect him. And that's why I'm telling you, that's why I'm so careful. That I don't say it's enough halachically that my wife could come home at any minute, or it's enough that my wife is home. I leave the door open. I say, "Look, you're uncomfortable, it's something private, and you're not comfortable discussing it. When the door's open, then we can't discuss it. Find someone else. I'm sorry." That's my condition. I'm not willing to do anything different. Now we go to a different aspect of halacha, and after this we'll get to the actual laws of yichud, which is using a woman. You sit on a date and the girl wants to pour you a drink. So you come to the Seder on Pesach by night, and the girl of the house is going around washing everyone's hands. You come to someone's house and you're a guest, and the woman of the house wants to make the bed for you. Or you're having your wife's sister as a guest, or someone else in the another girl's a guest, and you're going to go make the bed for her. Or you're the one that's going around washing everyone's hands, and you come to your mother-in-law. You're not allowed to wash a woman's hands. She's not allowed to wash your hands. You're not allowed to make a bed for another woman. Another woman is not allowed to make the bed for you, to pour a drink for her. Now, on this, you have to know that anything that's a service, meaning if it's you come to a restaurant and there's a waitress, then it's okay. If it isn't a service, so you should know that the world is lenient on this, and you have what to rely on if you want to be lenient. If you're on a date and you want to pour the girl a drink, you have what to rely on, and you're allowed to pour her a drink. I'm representing the other opinion first, because you have to be aware that this is an opinion you should try to live up to. There is what to rely on to be lenient. There are two opinions in halacha whether it's permissible or not, and if you want to, you're allowed to do it. You're allowed to pour her a drink, she's allowed to pour you a drink. If you come to someone's house and their wife pours you a drink, then don't say anything, because they're relying on the opinion that says it's permissible. Of course, if you know that it affects you, if you feel a certain affection when you're going to pour her a drink, then no one will say it's permissible. This is all assuming that you say it doesn't affect me. If it doesn't affect you, so then you could rely, if she's washing everyone's hands at the Seder night, you could rely on the opinions that say it's permissible and have her wash your hands. I'm telling you, though, that this is something to strive for, because things do happen. To eat from the same bowl. So you should try to have another plate that you each take off to. If you go on a date and they put one big salad in the middle, it's not right to eat from the same salad. If you have no choice, again, you have what to rely on. You have what to rely on, you're allowed to do it. You don't want to take this upon yourself, you're entitled to say we're eating from the same bowl. A person is not supposed to do things that represent love between him and his wife in front of other people. How far do you take this? So there are different opinions. I personally think that people should try not to walk in the street holding hands. They should save that for the house or other places. But that's already a question of interpretation. What's considered an act of real love between a couple? If someone will tell you that you're allowed to walk in the street holding your wife's hands, I could hear that. I wouldn't say it, but I could hear that someone else would say it. We're not allowed to send a woman regards. You're allowed to ask, how's your wife feeling? Is she okay? But you're not allowed to say, tell her I said hi. Tell her I said hello. You're not allowed to send a woman regards, but you are allowed to ask her husband how she's doing. The same thing is true in a letter. If you write a letter, you could say, how's your wife feeling? How's your wife doing? How's the family doing? It's more modest to say, how's everyone doing? Not that specifically about the wife.
What about regards like today when you just say dash?
I think it's the same thing. The Aruch HaShulchan says that to say good morning or have a good day, so he says that's like a general greeting. Dash, I don't think so. If you're talking to a guy, why do you have to send regards to his wife?
To his wife. Another girl you know.
So we said the only way you're allowed to ask how she's doing is to her husband. You're not allowed to ask someone else or ask her.
If she's not married or something.
That's why, so same thing. Any girl you're not allowed to. That's why I said that when I was going out, so you call up and the girl says, how are you? So I would say, thank God, fine. Mashlomchen, how are you in general? You plural do. Meaning I didn't ask her, mashlomech, how are you doing? Mashlomchen, the general you. Or manishma, how are things doing? There are ways of getting out of it. When I speak to my mother-in-law today, so I say, how are things doing there? I'm asking in general, how are all the kids? How's everyone? So I'm not being impolite. I'm not asking her. And on the other hand, I'm not asking her directly, how are you? Because I'm not supposed to.
let's say she's sick or she was sick. You say, how are you feeling? How is the health or something?
I think that's improper. You could ask her husband. We're not looking to make the bond between me and someone else's wife or me and any other girl that strong. When I'll marry her, then the bond will be strong. When you're dating, so you have to use wisdom to figure out how to do it. She's going to think, what kind of guy am I going out with? He's not asking me how I'm feeling. So figure out how to get around it.
She won't know if you will. It'll start asking once you're married, too.
So you have to think. Maybe you bring it up as a topic to discuss. Talk about it. Tell her, look, I can't ask you how you're feeling, but I want you to know that I can't ask you. Be smart. Figure it out. There are other ways of doing it. We're not allowed to touch any girl other than our mother, our daughter, our grandmother, our granddaughter, and our sister. But our sister, we said that's assuming that it doesn't affect you at all. We're not allowed to touch any other girl. Any touch that's of affection. I was once getting off a bus. There was an old woman behind me, and I saw she was about to fall off the bus. So, of course, I grabbed her, and I helped her off the bus. There was no affection there. I was leaving yeshiva 2-3 weeks ago, and right next to Merkaz Harav, there's the Bet Chinuch Ivrim, the House of Education for the Blind. And as I cross the street, I see there's a girl there standing. She wants to cross the street, but she's blind. She can't cross the street. So I was holding a bag. I offered her, do you mind holding my bag? I'll help you cross the street. There's no reason I should touch her. There are other ways of doing it. Now, there's no reason I shouldn't help her. The Gemara says, what's a chassid shote? What's a person who's a fool and he tries to be pious? That's a person who sees a naked woman drowning and says, I can't look, I can't look. That's a chassid shote. Now, Halacha says, she's drowning, you go save her. There's a blind girl who needs help crossing the street, so you help her, but figure out the halachically permissible way to do it. So I offered her my bag, and she held the bag, and I helped her cross the street. There are ways of doing it. People are automatically inclined to think, well, the halacha wants me to help this person, so I guess I'll have to give on the other front. No, there are ways of doing things, and it's proper on both fronts. You have to figure out how to do it. It's true that there are going to be times that we have to figure out what's going to be the compromise. Am I going to compromise on the halachas of negiya, or am I going to compromise on the halachas of helping a fellow person? So, again, a few weeks ago I was walking down the street, and two blind girls were walking together. We have a lot of blind people walking around here because of the House of Education there. And one of them didn't see a car and smacked her face, bashed into a car. Now, I wasn't sure if she needed help or not, but I'm not supposed to touch her. It wasn't life-threatening. It wasn't anything. Someone's going to help her. On the other hand, I didn't want to leave her alone. The poor girl just got hurt. So I asked her if she was okay. And she didn't know who I was. So why would she want any assistance from me? So I went up the block. I found another girl who I didn't know. I found the from girl on the street. And I said, look, there's a girl there who just hurt herself. I can't help her. But come, I'll help both of you. You help her physically, and I'll be there, and I'll help you with what I could. So I didn't leave the girl to die. I mean, she wasn't going to die anyways. But I wasn't going to be the one bandaging her up. She didn't need any bandages. That's the truth. But she might have been she had another girl with her. She wasn't totally lost. So there are halachically permissible ways of doing things. Don't think that because you're not allowed to touch her, you can't help her. And don't think that because you should help her, you have to touch her. You have to figure out what the proper way of doing things is. Sometimes you will have to compromise. So we're going to discuss, not in today's session, but we will discuss which gets compromised in which situation. A person is not allowed to be mityached, to be in a situation of yichud with a woman, Jewish woman, a non-Jewish woman, his aunt, his niece, his cousin, any woman other than his mother, daughter, grandmother, granddaughter, and sister, and obviously his wife.
Sister from both parents?
What?
Sister from both parents?
That's a good question. I don't know. We're not allowed to be in a situation of yichud. What is a situation of yichud? So we're going to define it generally, and then we're going to learn the halachos about it and define it better, I hope. Situation of yichud, in a general sense, is a situation where we're alone. Yichud, like yachid, alone, singularly, me and she, and no one else is here, and no one else is expected to be here. So you'll say, well, what about an elevator? So an elevator, the doors can open any second and everyone's going to see you. Our concern is that something improper is going to happen. And therefore, a person is not allowed to be alone with a woman. And it doesn't matter if she's Jewish or not Jewish. You'll be surprised how often this comes up. When my wife and I were engaged, so we wanted to start a certain business, and we needed a machine. And there was one guy who was distributor of the machine. So my wife was running the show, and we called the guy and asked him, she called him, asked him when she could come and see the specs on the machine. So he said, he gave her a time and he told her a place. And I told him, my wife, I don't know, what about Yichud? Do you know if this is an office with a lot of other people, or maybe this is his own home, or what? You don't know. It didn't sound like an office building. So I decided I'll go with her. And we went, and to our surprise, we walk into his house, and he locks the door behind us, and we walk into a room, and there's a sofa there. And if I wouldn't have been there, that would have been a classical case of Yichud. She would have been alone in the house with him. So because she knows halacha, she would have said, look, I'm sorry, I can't come in. But it would have been uncomfortable. This wasn't a religious person. He wouldn't have understood necessarily. So it was a good thing I came alone. But we're also going to discuss, did that work? Was that correct or not? Yeah.
When you say alone, does that mean just you and her? Like, what if there's another guy?
So we'll discuss that in a second. We'll get that in a second. And it doesn't make a difference if the girl is young or old. She could be 62, 72, 82. You could say, I wouldn't want even if she wanted. It doesn't matter. The halacha doesn't discern. The halacha says any woman that, other than the women we enumerated, you're not allowed to be alone with. A husband is allowed to be alone with his wife, even when she's a nida and they're forbidden to have marital relations. The Torah trusted him. This is only assuming that they have been together once. If one time they were together as husband and as wife, they're allowed to be together. If the marriage happened when she was a nida, then there are special halachas, which you learn when you are chasanim, about how we do not trust the chasan. We say, this guy was never with her, so he's not going to be able to contain himself, and then there are special halachas what we have to do. We say that a woman's wife is going to watch him. She's not going to let him do something wrong. This is only a Jewish wife. Because only in Judaism do we have the relationship where a wife could tell her husband, don't you dare. A non-Jew, we say his wife could be there and he'll say, oh, okay, whatever. A non-Jew, we say his wife isn't going to watch him. A non-Jew, even though his wife is there, a woman isn't allowed to be alone with him. But if it's a Jew, so if his wife is there, we say he's not going to mess around. He's not going to do anything. She's not going to let him. And that's why... You could have female guests at your house and stuff like that when your wife is home.
Just clarify. So if obviously the wife is Jewish, you're saying having a female guest that might be not Jewish?
I'm saying any woman, you could be with any woman so long as your wife is there. And you and she are Jewish. I'm just saying, let's say your wife,
you and the guest.
You and your wife. If you and your wife are Jewish, then you could be alone with any woman. And the same thing is true if your wife wants to go somewhere. Your wife wants to spend the night by a friend of hers. And her husband's going to be there. There's no problem of yichud because the husband and wife are there. But let's say your wife has a coworker who's not Jewish. And she says, you know, we're both going to this and this coworker's wedding. Why don't you come spend the night by me? And she's going to be there with her husband. So then we say that's a problem. You can't trust her husband's going to behave himself even though his wife is there. The reason I said Jewish is because of the situations where your wife is going to want to go. Or where you're going to want to, where you're going to have a situation where you'll be alone. We had a guy here at the Machon who was a guest at someone's house for a week. And his wife, he was alone with the wife, but he wasn't alone because the woman's husband was there. The questions arose when the husband went out to work and he was alone in the morning in the house with her. So that we'll get to in a minute.
Any Jew, or is it God-fearing Jew?
It doesn't say it explicitly, but I think it's I don't know. I have to look that up. It's a good question. Could we write it down? I have to look that up. I didn't think of that. A person isn't supposed to look for a job where he'll be dealing with women all the time. Because we say when you're dealing with women all the time, then they feel comfortable with you and improper things are going to happen. And all the protection isn't going to help unless your wife is next to you. And that's why our sages said a person shouldn't teach little children unless he's married and his wife is around, because we're concerned their mothers bring them to Gan, they take them from Gan, and he becomes friendly with them, and who knows what's going to happen. On this note, we don't let our children learn by non-Jews. Doesn't matter if it's an apprenticeship, he wants to learn a job. If he's a child, you don't let him learn by a non-Jew. There were times where we were worried he would kill him. Today, that's less of a problem, hopefully. So we're worried what he's going to teach him on the side. He's going to teach him all kinds of philosophy that's against our religion. And a third worry that was prevalent and today might again be prevalent is that he's going to teach him how to have marital relations with men. So that was rampant in certain times. Today it's again becoming rampant. You'll be surprised how rampant it is. I'm telling you from experience. Not experience people coming to me. A woman is not supposed to be alone, even if there are going to be two men or three men. So we say like this. The rules are, if there are two kosher men, then they're allowed to be alone with one woman. What's considered a kosher man? So there are two opinions as to what's considered a kosher man. The Shulchan Aruch says he has to be so kosher like Rav Chanina Bar Papi, the one who we said that the Roman mistress came to him and said, I want you now. And he said a special incantation to make boils on himself. And she said an incantation and she made him look beautiful again. And then he ran into a house where he would for sure get damaged if not killed, rather than be with her. So Shulchan Aruch says, only someone who's that pious, only he's considered a kasher. But the Ramah says that the average person who's a kosher person, a God-fearing kosher person, that's enough. So for Ashkenazim, you could rely on that. For Sephardim, ask your local Orthodox rabbi what you should do. No, it's a problem. The Shulchan Aruch doesn't go with that kula. And it's a very important kula. Now this is only in the city. In the city, in a place by daytime in the city. So we say two kosher men for Ashkenazim, that's the average God-fearing Jewish person, could be alone with one woman, and each one's going to be embarrassed from the other one, so they won't do anything improper. But what about if they're going for a trip to Yule, or it's at night? So then we say it's not enough two, you need three. Because one might go to the bathroom, one might have to go take care of something. We're always concerned that she should be left alone with only one. So at nighttime or in the fields, two aren't enough, you need three. Now, what if these are people who are not God-fearing people? So then we say even 10, you can't be alone with them. Because they're not God-fearing people, so 10 people get together and do an improper thing. The Gemara records many stories. They had an institution in a certain city that they didn't let a woman walk with her child behind her, only in front of her. Because they had once a woman was walking and suddenly her kid disappeared. So she started wailing. She looked all around. She can't find her kid. And someone told her, I'll show you where he is. He came up to her and he led her to a broken down building. She walked in. She saw her kid at the other end. And when she walked in, there were a bunch of men waiting for her and improper things happened. So they instituted that a woman won't walk in the street with her kid behind her. Now these were Jews who did this to this woman. These weren't non-Jews. So the halacha is we don't trust a Jew unless he's a God-fearing kosher Jew. The fact that he's Jewish isn't enough. And then we say you need two. We don't trust him. If there are two, then it's enough, so long as it's in the city or by daytime. There's a concept of ba'ala ba'ir. If a woman's wife is in the city, so we say, then she'll be careful and the guy will be careful. And then, let's say you fix washing machines, you have to go into the house, you have to fix the washing machine, your neighbor's wife knocks on your door, she needs your help moving the refrigerator, he's not around. So we say, Ba'ala Ba'ir, if her husband is in the city, he's around at any second, he could pop in, so you could walk into the house, even though it means you'll be alone. Now this only works if you two don't have a very close relationship. The Gemara records that Rav Yosef once had one of the great Amoraim over to his house, and he gave him to eat in the attic, and then when they finished eating, he said, okay, now take away the ladder. So they asked him, what are you worried about? You're going to yeshiva, but you're in the city, so what's going to happen? So he said, it's right that I'm in the city, but when they were younger, my wife and he were very good friends. And from there we learn the halacha that if the two of them have a good relationship, if they feel very comfortable with one another, so then it doesn't help that her husband is in the city. And they still can't be alone. So he said, you take away the ladder, he can't come down. The same thing is true if a husband feels that something wrong is happening between this girl with his wife and someone else, then it doesn't help that he's in the city. There are opinions that say, l'chatchila, we don't rely on this of Ba'ala Ba'ir. And the last point that helps us be mekel is when there's an open door, something open to Rishus HaRabim, when anyone could walk in or anyone can see. This is only good when it's realistic. The first apartment we lived in was the top floor apartment. So no one comes up to the top floor except for the neighbor across the hall. And when we went to see that apartment, so I told my wife, we can't go in. We were still engaged, we weren't married yet. I said, we walk into the apartment, it's yichud. So she said, isn't it enough that we leave the door open? So I told her, let's be realistic. When was the last time you saw someone walk into an apartment just because the door was open? Nowadays, does anyone do that? We don't live in that kind of world. If you live in a yeshuv, it might work. In the kibbutzim and the yeshuvim, people walk into one another's houses. The door's open, you just walk in. But you live here in the city.
Even if the doors are closed, you walk into the rooms.
Okay, so maybe here that would work. But where you're going to live, when you go see an apartment, I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think that happens nowadays. I don't think people are being realistic. They say the door is not locked. Yeah, but you and I know that if we wanted to do something, we wouldn't be embarrassed. We don't think anyone's going to walk in just because the door is not locked. So in an office situation, a guy wants to work late, and there's another girl that's working late. They have a problem. No one's going to walk in. We know that. Everyone went home. So what could we do? So there's a concept of a shomer. That you tell someone, I'm going to be in a situation where I'm alone with this girl, and I want you to walk in on us every so often. Here's the key, you have access, you could come in whenever you want. So long as that person is realistically, potentially going to enter at any given time, realistically again. If he's going to tip the alarm, or you're going to have warning, or other things, then it's not realistic. It has to be real, that you know someone else is potentially there at any given time, you could rely on it. Again, check yourselves. Does it really make sense for you to rely on it? These aren't halachas you want to be makel on. Too many people have fallen. The greatest people have fallen on these issues. And no one can trust himself. Anyone who thinks he can trust himself is either not normal, or, and then maybe he could trust himself if he's really not normal. If he has no inclination to go with women, if he's not a normal man, so then, okay, maybe he could trust himself. But if he's a normal male, then he's probably being dishonest when he thinks he could trust himself. Well, what did you want to ask?
Can you combine Balbi'ir with the door open thing?
Yeah. again, if it's realistic. So long as it's realistic. Most of the time that I see it, it's not realistic. You know the guy went to work. You know he works a 9-to-5 job. He's not walking into the house in the middle of the day. I make it a point to come home every so often at unspecified times just so that I could rely on this halachically. My wife never knows. I could always walk into the house. I sometimes walk in at 11 o'clock, sometimes I walk in at 3 o'clock. Usually I don't come home before 9, 10 o'clock at night. So it's a problem. Anytime we need something fixed, how's my wife going to be home? So we could leave the door open, and we could tell a neighbor, you know, the door's open, etc. And we could also know that I could come home at any interval. And that's true, I could. But in the average case, it doesn't. It's not that way. In the average home, you know the husband's not coming home. Now, if a person wants to be alone with his mother, it's okay. They could live in the same house alone. Same thing with his daughter. Same thing. What about a sister? So there we say no. We say they could be alone in a room. They could have yichud. But to take a dorm room together, to live on a permanent basis together for a few months, that's already improper. If it happens at intervals that a brother and sister are alone, that's not a problem. They could have yichud. But to be together on a long-term basis, which doesn't mean years, it could mean a month or two, that's improper. There are women who we say are going to hate one another. A mother-in-law and a daughter-in-law, and many other relationships, two wives to the same man. So the Shulchan Aruch lists different women that we assume hate one another, and therefore you could be alone with them. If you know a mother-in-law and a daughter-in-law are going to be alone in the house, and you have to come fix the washing machine, even though ordinarily we say a man shouldn't be alone even if there are two women, that's not enough. Three women, so maybe that is enough, but two women is not enough. So two women, we say, so they'll both mess around. But if it's a mother-in-law and daughter-in-law, we say each one knows that the other one has it in for her, so she won't dare do something improper. So the Shulchan Aruch lists certain relationship that we assume there's hatred there.
Wait, can you list the
relationships? I don't remember. I have to open the Shulchan Aruch. I remember mother-in-law and daughter-in-law, and I don't remember. You could look it up in Shulchan Aruch, Sim Chaf Gimel, in Evan Ezer. What about a young girl? Does she help for Yichud? So we say if she's old enough, that if a person has marital relations, she'll understand what's happening. And yet she's not old enough that she herself would want to have marital relations, then she protects. So long as you're in the city, we say if she's in the house, that's enough. Why? Because if you do something, she'll see it, and she'll tell other people. So that causes you to be cautious. If you're on the road, so we say, well, then we're worried that a person might rape her also. So we say that's not enough. But in the house, in the city, we say if a young girl is there who would understand what's happening, but she herself wouldn't have an inclination to do it, then it's permissible. A person has to take care not to appoint men in his home. Our sages say that if Potiphar wouldn't have appointed Yosef in charge of his house, all those improper things wouldn't have happened. Even though, bottom line, Yosef didn't sin with Potiphar's wife. But what brought all the problems? The fact that he had a servant who was in charge of things. So you want to help a guy out, give him a job that's external to the house. Don't bring a cleaning man to the house when your wife is going to be there. If he's going to constantly be there, day after day, he's the one that she's with, our sages say you're bringing trouble to the house. In general, if you run into difficult situations, you should know that...
She's pregnant.
What? Doesn't make a difference if she's pregnant. She could be pregnant, she could be 92, the halachas don't change.
92?
Yeah.
She's a nida.
Doesn't matter.
I'm missing one eye.
Doesn't matter. You're joking. I had this issue. There was an old man who I once went to help put on tefillin. And he couldn't put on his own tefillin. But he had a girl who was taking care of him. That's a problem. Sure. So I'm sure they asked the local Orthodox rabbis, and I'm sure it was a situation where...
Well, that's the opposite. No male than a young woman. It's
okay.
I'm talking about a young man with a man to a young woman.
Makes no difference. Places where this might come up is when your wives go to a gynecologist. So you should try to come along or ensure that someone else could enter the room at any given time. From gynecologist or from doctor would know to have this in his office, that men could enter at any time. On the other hand, if a man could enter at any time, how's he going to check her? A woman doesn't want to sit by a gynecologist and think that a man could walk in at any time. So that's why it's better if you go along, she has a female gynecologist, or you figure something else out. But you should be aware that this could be an issue.
But if you're covered in feces and you smell, it's okay.
No, it's not okay. It's not okay. He just knew that that was his best way of getting out of it, but that didn't make it permissible.
Question about foster or adopted children?
Yeah, so that there's a lot of discussion about. When a person is in that situation, he has to discuss it. The dry halacha would say it's a problem. So applied halacha says we figure out solutions. But it is an issue. A person who adopts a daughter, she's not his daughter. So what is he permitted to do? What is he forbidden to do? He has to talk to his rabbi. Of course, we find whatever leniences we can to ensure that the home runs smoothly.
He's permitted to marry her, I think, no? An adopted daughter?
That's a separate discussion. Any questions still here? No. You guys all seem very sad.
More knowledgeable.
Just be aware that we started, these are new concepts, let it sink in, and remember that if the world would live with these concepts, the world would look like a much better place. We're aspiring to be holy people, but by doing that we're not saying that we are holy people. We're saying in order to be a holy person, we're going to recognize that we're made of mud and that we have a soul. And we're going to let our soul take charge, but we're going to protect ourselves from letting the mud take charge. So if this seems a little extreme to you, think about it. take your time, digest it, and think about what's been going on in the world. Open a newspaper on any given day and read what goes on in the world. And anyone who thinks that people who do improper things